My name is Joseph Huff. My registration number is 34384. I'm a public defender and I represent Mr. Barton. I want to make something really clear right off the bat here, and that is that I'm not saying my client is completely blameless in this case. Of course he's not. And I want to say that there was ample evidence of third degree assault here. But the problem for the prosecution is there certainly wasn't ample evidence or even sufficient evidence that my client caused a serious bodily injury here.
Can I ask you, Mr. Huff, and I know you're just getting ahead of steam,
yeah,
I apologize.
Fine, sir.
Is the fracture the only serious bodily injury we're talking about in this case? You know, there was bruising and other injuries, I think. But is the fracture the only issue we're talking about here?
I'm pretty sure that the prosecution argued nothing less than the fracture, or nothing more than the fracture.
Thank you.
I think everybody was in agreement here, and it might have even been specified in the complaint information that the serious bodily injury was the fracture. And I'm not here to dispute that a fracture would constitute serious bodily injury, but of course it has to be caused at the time of the incident and not, in this case, perhaps 10 years prior to the incident due to something entirely unrelated. And I stake almost my entire claim on the prosecution's sole expert witness, and that was Dr. Shirley Kung. And she is what I would consider a godsend for the defense, because she stood up there and she said, yes, this would constitute serious bodily injury, but it's of an indeterminate age. And when we pressed Dr. Kung, well, what does indeterminate age mean exactly? She said this, and I'm going to quote, there's no indication that the injury occurred, here's her quote, acutely or within a very short time before the CAT scan was performed. Well, then we followed up and said, well, what would you expect to see of an acute injury that happened at or near the time at issue? She says, well, a non-acute injury, usually it doesn't show any of the specific signs or characteristics of an acute fracture, so the radiologist in this case had to call it indeterminate, meaning he can't tell how old the fracture was or whether or not it occurred at the time or if it occurred prior to that. She said, acute fractures exhibit the following: jagged edges, bones that had not started to heal, some bruising or bleeding around the actual area of the fracture. None of this was observed in the victim in this case. And in fact, when he came into the ER, he had absolutely no complaints about his nose being broken. There was no bleeding coming from his nose. There was no swelling. And he later admitted, yes, it had been broken in the past, but of course that had nothing to do with the altercation at issue.
Was there evidence that there had been bleeding at the site?
One of the witnesses did in fact describe bleeding from the face, perhaps from the nose. That wasn't exactly clear. And I think you're referring to the eyewitness, Ms. Muniz here. She said in particular that she saw my client stomping on the victim's head very hard. There was a boot mark on the side of his face. And I'm not saying that that couldn't have caused a break or fracture. I'm saying that the evidence wasn't substantial or sufficient in this case, that that is in fact what caused the fracture, that probably by all accounts, according to their own expert witness, was probably caused previously and might have been this 10-year-old fracture that he suffered during a car accident.
Did the expert say, I mean, I know you're just arguing, I don't think the expert said it was probably caused 10 years earlier, right? Or that's what you just said. But my understanding is the expert said, I can't tell when this occurred.
She said, I can't tell, but what I would expect from an acute fracture that had just recently occurred would be jagged edges, bones that had not started to heal, bleeding or bruising around the fracture area. And she noted none of that in this case. So to me, that's the functional equivalent of her saying this did not have any of the indications of an acute or recent fracture.
Your argument obviously is very strong here, but why couldn't a reasonable jury say, I got evidence that Mr. Barton is stomping on the victim's head. I have evidence that there's blood on the ground. I have evidence that, you know, of a fractured nose at some point. I don't know when it happened. why couldn't a reasonable jury conclude just from that evidence? Stomp on the guy's head, boot mark on his face, blood on the ground, and a fracture sometime, that the fracture happened then. Why couldn't a reasonable jury reach that conclusion?
If they had not called that expert witness, and if they had just relied upon the victim himself to say, he stomped on my face, I felt my nose had broken, it moved around, it felt broken to me, I think that would probably be sufficient. The problem is when they bring in an expert witness that supplies evidence that completely undermines that, then I don't think it is reasonable to say with any degree of certainty, beyond guessing, speculation, or conjecture, which the jury's not allowed to do, that there was substantial and sufficient evidence that my client actually did cause this fracture at the time charged. If there are no other questions at this time, I'll leave the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Huff.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Elizabeth Rohrbaugh, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado. It's certainly the people's position that by stomping on the victim's face, that the defendant caused the victim's broken nose on September 11th, 2011. And I think that the standard for sufficiency of the evidence being viewed in the light most favorable to the people is favorable here and supports the people's position. It's axiomatic that this court does not make credibility determinations, nor does this court evaluate discrepancies in evidence. It doesn't matter if there is some evidence that would support one proposition, which is to say that perhaps the nose had been broken 10 years earlier in a car accident. That's immaterial. What's material is what supports the people's case.
Well, I guess that's the question, right? I mean, there's no evidence, anybody that, and please correct me, but I don't remember any record evidence that says, my nose was broken today. What we know is the facts, as you just described them, I don't think anybody disputes those facts. And then we have the people's own experts saying, I don't know when that nose was broken. So where is the evidence that the nose was broken at this incident? I mean, it's, I recognize we have to give the people all benefit of the doubt and reasonable inferences, but I'm not sure what we would infer from. We have a stomping on the head, and then we have some evidence that the nose was fractured sometime.
Your Honor, if you look at the testimony of the officer who responded to the scene at page 98 on April 17th, 2012, she says, quote, he appeared to have some pretty serious injuries based upon the blood that was coming from his face. It appeared he had a tooth that was missing. He had blood on his lips. It was red blood, flesh, fresh. He had blood coming from his nose. He had blood coming from the left side of his face on his eyebrow area. He looked small, very bloody face, multiple abrasions. I mean, clearly the victim was severely injured by having his face stomped on by the defendant. And there was evidence that, in fact, he had suffered a broken nose. Now, when we look at the testimony of Dr. Cohn, Dr. Cohn filled out the SBI form, the serious bodily injury form, indicating that the victim had suffered serious bodily injury, that he had a broken nose. And as I understand it, the defense does not argue that the victim did not have a broken nose. The defense is only arguing that this might have happened 10 years previously. The evidence that it didn't come 10 years previously, when we look at what the doctor said about what the radiologist said, she said that the radiologist looked at two scans. One was the head scan, and from the head scan, the radiologist said that this was of indeterminate age, meaning it didn't have characteristics of an acute injury. But my understanding is that does not mean that it could not be an acute injury. And that this was established by the people in rebuttal testimony. The prosecutor asked this question, which has perhaps a few too many negatives in it. Now, in the absence of some of those signs you were looking for, while they don't help you make a determination that, yes, this is acute, is it possible that there might be an absence of some of the signs that would suggest an acute fracture, but nonetheless, it wasn't an acute fracture? And the answer is sure, that's definitely possible. So It doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't acute by saying it was of indeterminate age. Now, there was a second sort of scan that was done, which was a so-called facial scan. And the doctor testified that the radiologist had not said of this particular scan that it was of indeterminate age. The radiologist had just said that the victim had suffered a fracture. So we don't have any determination as to age with regard to that second scan, which she said would be more relevant, that that would be a place where you would more commonly look for these acute characteristics. But when we look at the evidence of the whole, as a whole, which is to say the bloody nature of the scene, the fact that the eyewitness observed the defendant stomp on the victim's face, and we look at the fact that the victim himself said that he had facial pain, he did have bleeding, which is one of the characteristics, and he also had bruising, that he testified, yes, his nose had been broken, but he said, but it's more crooked now. And he also said that he suffered pain. So when we look at all of this evidence together, again, it doesn't matter that the defense could make an argument and did make an argument to the jury that, in fact, this break was from 10 years previously. It was a question for the jury to determine. And the jury did, in fact, determine that the defendant caused serious bodily injury to the victim.
And I asked Mr. Huff this, and I meant to ask you, is the fractured nose here the only serious bodily injury we're talking about, or is there some other serious bodily injury that might support the charge?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that is the one that was principally discussed at trial. I don't know about this tooth that appeared to have been knocked off, knocked out. I don't know that the jury perhaps could have found that constituted serious bodily injury, but that was certainly not the argument made to it.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions, I'd ask this court to affirm the jury's determination.
Thank you, Ms. Rohrbaugh.
Thank you.
Mr. Huff?
And in the, if the tooth knocking out had been charged, if the tooth knocking out had been what everybody agreed was the serious bodily injury, I wouldn't even be here. Because that was clear, and that was undisputable, and there was no conjecture about that. The problem is, I don't understand how the Attorney General can get up here and say she's sure that my client caused this fracture when the prosecution's own medical expert witness couldn't even opine on that. Now, it would be different if they brought in two and they had competing versions, because of course credibility issues are to be resolved by the jury, but this isn't a credibility issue. This is a scientific issue. This is a substantial proof issue, and it just wasn't met in this case.
So are you saying there simply is a lack of evidence with regard to the causation?
That's absolutely what I'm saying. I'm not disputing that at some point the victim had suffered a fracture. I'm just saying it's not substantial and sufficient evidence that my client was the proximate and direct cause of that fracture. And I think if we refer back to the U.S. Supreme Court standards for sufficiency in Jackson versus Virginia, 1979, a case that I use in my brief, they say it must rise to the level of a subjective state of near certitude of guilt. Our courts are very similar. They say it must not be based on guessing, speculation, conjecture, and that it must be substantial and sufficient. I agree, all inferences go to the prosecution. Can't argue around that. But at the end of the day, I don't think this court or anyone else could say that this was substantial and sufficient evidence when the DA's own expert witness can't even say that. If there are no other questions, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Huff. Thank you, counsel. Oral arguments having been received, the case is now submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course.